When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
After two Cardinals games in one day on Tuesday, we break down Jack Flaherty, Kyle Gibson, a possible Steven Matz injury, and what to do with Brandon Crawford, all coming up on B-Shafe Daily. What's going on, everyone, and welcome in to this edition of B-Shafe Daily. Brendan Schaefer with you. It is Tuesday evening, April 30th, 2024. The month of May is just about upon us, and the Cardinals are coming off a doubleheader split against the Detroit Tigers at Comerica Park. Monday was the rainout, and they played two on Tuesday. Cardinals get the first one, but it really felt like they stole it out from under Jack Flaherty and the Tigers. 14 strikeouts for Flaherty, a career high, but the Cardinals find a way to get the win anyway. We'll talk about that game. Flaherty's performance and Kyle Gibson's performance in nearly matching Flaherty stride for stride, keeping the Cardinals in that game until the offense was able to do something finally against the bullpen, which also came, ironically, against another former Cardinal. And then game two, well, what do the Cardinals do with that newfound momentum? They squander it. Yeah, 11-6, the final score in Tuesday night's game. And from that contest, we're breaking down a potential Steven Matz injury, as Steven Matz did not pitch well at all, did not do his job, quite frankly, when you consider the circumstances of this game and of this doubleheader and of this quick series taking place in Detroit. They needed more from Steven Matz in terms of a length perspective today. They didn't get it. And it came back to haunt the Cardinals in the way that they had to use the bullpen in the night game on Tuesday. Despite the offense coming up with a little bit of thunder, how about Alec Burleson's day? Big day for Burley. But we also have to talk about another storyline from Game 2 where it may be the case that the Cardinals, and specifically Ollie Marmol at least, I don't know if I can speak for the front office at this point, but I can speak for the way that Ollie viewed it based on his actions during Game 2. The Cardinals may be joining Cardinals fans in the way that they are viewing the contributions of one Brandon Crawford to this point. I thought today there was a notable change in the way that he was handled and the role that they've been looking for him to fill after he decidedly didn't fill it effectively during the first part of the night game on Tuesday. So I want to get into a little bit deeper the Brandon Crawford conversation. It is an uncomfortable one to have, but I think I'm just about ready to have it based on what we've seen to this point. So that's all coming up on B-Shafe Daily. If you enjoy Cardinals content, hit that subscribe button in the lower right-hand corner of your screen. It's red. It looks like a play button. And that'll get you Brendan Schaefer, St. Louis Cardinals writers, content on this YouTube channel moving forward as we cover the Cardinals daily all season long and into the offseason as well. You can also follow B-Shafe Daily on Spotify, where, by the way, we are two reviews from having 100 total reviews on our Spotify channel. So head on over there and be number 100. You win, well, nothing, but I kind of want to get to 100, so please do it, okay? All right, let's go ahead and get into some Cardinals content here. We'll start with Game 1. We'll go chronologically with this bad boy. Unfortunately, that's going to mean talking about the good and then getting to the bad, but yeah, that's kind of been the nature of this Cardinals season. You get some good, you get some bad, and they stay sort of hovering slightly below 500. They're 14-16 as they end the day on Tuesday. It'll be a quick turnaround, too. 12:35, something like that, for the start time on Wednesday in Detroit, which means this essentially is a series, a three-game series that will take place within about a 24-hour span. Miles Michaelis and Kenta Maeda going on Wednesday, a pitching matchup of two guys that have an ERA of 5.9. So we'll see if runs might be freely given and freely taken by both sides on Wednesday. But we begin tonight with a game where runs were at a premium, as Jack Flaherty looked as good as we've ever seen him. He looked exactly like he looked for that magical run, if you remember, started in about early July, I want to say, maybe really locked it in after the All-Star break that year in 2019, where he just was absolutely untouchable. Bob Gibson-esque in the second half of 2019. And today it was Gibby, Kyle Gibson on the other side, dueling Jack Flaherty. And he didn't out-duel him because Gibby gave up a run. Solo shot by Riley Green. Tigers outfielder also hit a homer off of Gallegos in the night game. And we'll get to Gio as well. Didn't tease it off the top, but we're going to have to talk about Gio too. And the trouble that his struggles are bringing for the Cardinals bullpen as his unfortunate season continued on Tuesday night. But Riley Green got all of the pitch from Gibson in the fourth inning. It was just a solo home run, but he hit it to dead straightaway center field, which is really hard to do at Comerica Park, as Pedro Páez found out in the ninth inning when his sacrifice fly that helped put the Cardinals on top of that game in game one. It was hit so deep that it would have been a homer in 17 of 30 MLB parks, including Busch Stadium, which is known more as a pitcher's park. Well, it wasn't a home run here. Warning track fodder for Páez. But my point with that is that, my goodness, did Riley Green get all of it against Kyle Gibson to hit it out to that same spot in the park. 92 over the plate. Gibson left it over, and Riley knew what to do with it. But that was really the only mistake that he made all game. Kyle Gibson was fantastic and has been fantastic, our guy Gibby, since joining the Cardinals. I know that you can't do this. I know you can't just take away the six-run inning against the Marlins, but I'll continue to repeat that I believe there was some scuttlebutt that he was maybe tipping pitches during that inning, and the Cardinals noticed it right away and were able to correct the issue and move on. If that ends up being the case, it gives you a little more confidence as to why the one blow-up inning. And I know that Kyle Gibson has had blow-up innings before in his career. I think he famously gave up four straight home runs in an inning once to this very same Cardinals team. Not the same Cardinals team, because this was a number of years ago. I know Arenado was one of the four. I can't remember who all four. But Kyle Gibson has that from time to time. But this year, he had that one inning and has otherwise been absolutely lights out. ERA in the low twos, I want to say, outside of that inning. But we don't even have to do that game anymore with how good he's pitched. We don't have to say that take out this and his ERA would be such. His ERA, full sentence, is 3.79, which is pretty damn good when you consider that I think most people were saying, I was saying, look, Kyle Gibson is probably going to be about what he is, ERA in the mid-fours. That's what he's been. That's probably what he'll be. But maybe there's more helium to what Kyle Gibson could bring. Now, I understand that the next time he does happen to have a bit of a hiccup, gives up five or six in a game, that's going to level out his ERA. But if Kyle Gibson throws for a 3.8 or a 4.2 or a 4.3 or even a 4.4 or 5 ERA, he's going to be toward the back end of your rotation in the way that you think of it mentally. And he's going to continue to give you innings. And that's the one thing that I don't know how much Cardinals fans really bought into it mattering when the Cardinals said they needed to go out and get innings this offseason. But Kyle Gibson was targeted for a variety of reasons, but one of them was the innings that the Cardinals believed he could provide, and now through six starts, he is doing it. I'll read it off for you. Here are the innings counts for Kyle Gibson as a Cardinal through six games. 7-6-6-6-6-7. Now that is some consistency. And in the earned runs category, or just the runs category in general, he hasn't had an unearned run this year. He's given up 2-7, which was the one against Miami that we're talking about, where six of them came in the first inning, might have been tipping, and then 4-1-1-1. This guy has been nails. He has lowered his ERA over the last three games from 6.16 all the way down to 3.79. And today against the Tigers, he did something that we haven't really seen Kyle Gibson do, which is the swing and miss element of his game that he showed today. 9 strikeouts, by far a season high for Kyle Gibson to this point. Granted, he didn't throw as many strikeouts as the guy on the other side, but Kyle Gibson is not a guy known for a super high K rate. He can get you some. For his career, though, he's about 7.2 Ks per nine, and he's been declining each of the last 3 years. He went from 7.7 down to 7.4 And so far this year with the Cardinals, he was only at 5.8 strikeouts per nine. So that's not really been a hallmark of his game in recent years, but it was today. Nine strikeouts and none bigger than the one he got against Mark Canha to finish off the seventh inning. And I thought that was a moment that you put a star next to for both Gibson and Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol had a decision to make there. And it was interesting the way it played out. Carson Kelly was the batter in the eight hole for Detroit, and you had first base open. Cardinals down 1-0 already, but it's pretty darn important to keep it right there for the offense to feel like it's really got any shot to tie or take the lead without it being a really massive rally necessary. If you're down 1-0, you're right there within striking distance, as the Cardinals ended up finding out in the ninth. But with Carson Kelly batting, the Cardinals had John King, a left-handed reliever, getting ready in the bullpen for a string of lefties that was due up in the Detroit lineup. I think Parker Meadows was the on-deck batter, who had been 0-for to that point in the day, but he is a lefty. And so you figure, if you're going to be careful with Carson Kelly as Kyle Gibson, it may mean that you don't get a chance to get out of your own jam if they end up sending up the lefty and the Cardinals and Ollie Marmol ultimately opts to go for John King, which John King is not necessarily a name that inspires a ton of confidence so far this year to Cardinals fans, because they remember what happened in Los Angeles when they had to go to him in a key spot and it didn't end up panning out. But he is a lefty, and so that's kind of the role that he has on this bullpen. I think a lot of people criticize Ollie Marmol for things that he doesn't really have a lot of control over. He's the manager of the team, and you've got guys slotted into certain roles, but he doesn't decide who's on the team, who's on the 26-man roster, etc. John King's on the roster, so conceivably, he's the guy that would be warming up for that spot. And if you see anything from Kyle Gibson that indicates you should pull him after the Carson Kelly at bat, then the left-on-left matchup might make sense. But what happens instead, the first part of it plays out. Kyle Gibson is very careful with Carson Kelly. He throws him tons of sweepers low and away, trying to get him to chase, as you would do if you've got runners on second and third and you want him to stay there. You have first base open, had to come up and in on him at one point, but it was basically just to set up the sweeper away to try to put him away on a full count. Didn't get the chase. Carson Kelly I handled it properly because it was pretty evident watching it too. I thought he's just going to try to get him to chase a sweeper low and away. And in the full count, he didn't do that. So he walks, he takes his base, and then there's this decision to be made. But the Tigers, I think, maybe had some influence over it too. And it may have been Gibby's spot regardless. I don't know. There was no post-game show after game one, at least that I saw with Ollie Marmol. So kind of hard to get into the details of everything that happens in a doubleheader. But that's what we're doing here, so we roll with it. But they send up a pinch hitter, Mark Canha, who ended up batting third for the Tigers in game two. Didn't start game one, but he's a pretty good hitter. Right-handed bat, though. So you're not going to bring in John King to face a right-handed bat, which almost forces the issue. I don't know if Ollie had anybody else warming up besides the lefty. You'd like to think that he did, because the possibility to pinch hit for your nine-hole hitter, well, you might want to anticipate that on the other side. But the ultimate decision was go with Gibby. And that might be why he may not have needed somebody warming up, because in Ollie's mind, hey, if they do decide to turn it around and send a righty out, then we'll just stick with Gibson because we like what he's done. And his pitch count is not absurd to where you would be worried about him not having any gas left in the tank. He did throw a season-high pitch count, 98, by the end of the game, by the end of that seventh inning, but they thought he could handle it, and he certainly did. The juxtaposition of watching the Carson Kelly at bat, where he's not really wanting to miss over the plate if he misses. His misses were way low and away with the sweeper and way up and relatively in on Kelly the one time he climbed the ladder with a fastball. He just wanted to put it up and over the zone just to probably change the eye level and see if he couldn't get Carson Kelly to flinch, and he didn't. But then it was a completely different battle against Mark Canha. You knew that Kyle Gibson, with nowhere to put the batter, had to come after him and had to throw good quality stuff within the strike zone, and he struck him out on a pitch that was in the zone. Wasn't looking for chase. I'm just going to beat you. And it was good to see Kyle Gibson kind of give the roar coming off the mound. We talk about the emotion of Lance Lynn and how he pitches with an edge. Kyle Gibson was bringing it today, Cardinals fans, and this guy continues to be fun to watch. Gets into some jams from time to time, but he finds his way out of them more often than not. 3.79 ERA. Cardinals would take that for the full season if Kyle Gibson's able to provide it. We'll see. 4 hits, 2 walks, and just the 1 solo homer allowed today in Game 1. As he got taken off the hook by the Cardinal offense late, he was not the winner in this game, but he wasn't the loser either, and he shouldn't have been with the way that he pitched. Now, you could make a case on the other side that the way that he pitched, Jack Flaherty should have been the winner in this baseball game. 6 2/3 innings, the Cardinals dinked a couple of singles off him, and they drew a walk, and that was it. 14 strikeouts. The first 6 batters were all struck out across 2 perfect innings for Flaherty. I mean, they just didn't have a chance. And you could have predicted this. I wish I would have. I wish I would have had the foresight to talk about it. But when I did Monday's B-Shafe Daily, and it wasn't about a baseball game because there wasn't one on Monday night, I talked about the Cardinals potentially somewhere down the line requesting $500 to $600 million in public funds to upgrade Busch Stadium to do some renovations. That was a report in the Riverfront Times a couple weeks ago, and I finally just, with the rain out last night, got a chance to do a video on it. So you can scroll back on the podcast feed on Spotify or just on the YouTube channel. You won't miss it. It's the video thumbnail that has the DeWitts in the photo, which is not something I usually do, but it's very relevant to this particular story to have Bill DeWitt III and Bill DeWitt Jr. in the photo. So if you wanted to hear that conversation, it's a conversation that I had with myself, like most of these podcasts, but that's why I didn't do any real baseball talk within that episode, or I might have thought to say, hey, by the way, we all know what's coming, right? We know that Jack Flaherty is going to come out pumping 100 and absolutely shove against the Cardinals. He didn't quite pump 100, but 97.8, I believe, was the high for Flaherty, and he had plenty of fastballs in the 97 range, which we didn't often see. When all that art of pitching stuff was going down, the reason those questions were being asked is because his fastball velocity was gone. He was throwing like 90, 91, which is not Jack Flaherty. He's 94, 95 when he's at his best and clearly can pump it up for a little bit extra when he needs to. When he's healthy, that's the key. And I understand this too. Jack Flaherty has gone through some tough injury situations. Not his fault, just has had various issues over the years. And no player going into free agency wants to have that injury-prone label, especially not a pitcher, especially not a pitcher looking to get a contract. And, of course, we know how 2023 panned out for Jack. He didn't have a great year, and he settles for a 1-year sort of pillow contract with Detroit. But I think this could pan out really well for him. His numbers have been up and down, but today lowers his ERA to 4.00. If he ends up parlaying this momentum into something more the rest of the way, or at least go on a little bit of a run here, I could see Jack Flaherty bouncing back and getting the contract that he was maybe coming into the offseason hoping he would get. Or maybe the one that he hoped at the beginning of 2023 would be possible before that year went off the rails and maybe just didn't have the full complement of his physical health at the time, which might have been why he was throwing 91, which might have been why he was a little bit defensive about the art of pitching. Nevertheless, he was unbelievable today, and the Cardinals just had no chance, and you knew it would be the case. I was looking at the gaudy strikeout totals, and it's not like it really even fazed me because I said, yeah, this is of course what was going to happen. I saw people commenting on some group chats that said the Vegas odds on Jack Flaherty's strikeout total today were 5.5. I was like, you got to be joking if that was real. That, I mean, over. It was over after the second inning. That should have been obvious. You could have asked me 10, and I probably would have said, yeah, he'll get more than 10. I mean, it just seemed like he pitches with an edge when he needs to find it, and if he's healthy, he was going to have it today, and he did. But incredibly, the Cardinals win this game. I said on Twitter they took the Tigers lunch money with the way that played out in the ninth because they had no business. The Cardinals just had no business winning the game, even though they did out-hit the Tigers 7-4. This should have been a 1-0 win, though, for the Tigers, where they can celebrate Riley Green's home run and say it was one of the best pitching duels in baseball that we have seen all year, with both guys getting into the seventh, recording outs in the seventh, and Gibby actually completing the seventh. But it should have been 1-0. Nobody told the Cardinals, though, because they found a way to pluck away against Shelby Miller, of all people, who's been a really solid option for the Tigers so far this year as their closing pitcher. But the Cardinals got the heart of the order up. Nupar didn't do anything, and we might have to talk about Lars Nupar's struggles as well. He did come up with a double in the night game, I believe it was. I can pull this up. I'm dealing with a lot of box scores here, so forgive me. Yeah, 1-for-4 with a double. Also reached via walk in the night game. OPS is back up over 600. But after the morning game, it was down to the OPS was down to 586 and a 179 average. He's still only hitting 180. Had 3 strikeouts in the early game. But after the Nupar out, Arenado, Goldschmidt, and Burleson, like it was nothing. Base knock, base knock, base knock. You're tied just like that. And then you have Pedro Páez come in, because the way they did it, I'm trying to remember in game one how Páez came to be. I think they had Fermin pinch hit at one point for Gorman, who's continuing to struggle. 0-for-2 with 2 Ks for him in the early game, and did not do a ton in the night game. He did reach base a couple times. 1-for-4 with a walk. No runs scored or RBIs, however, with 1K. So he's hitting 196. But I'm remembering what it was now. It was a pinch runner that came on for Herrera, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, Ciani pinch ran for Herrera the inning prior, and it was kind of an interesting decision on its face because that was the guy at first, and there was also a runner blocking Ciani on second. So I guess a ball in the gap, he gets to score two, and then you have the lead. That'd be the reason you'd do that. Other than the fact that it's not just for that moment. We keep talking about the preference to have Pedro Páez behind the plate late in games rather than Herrera on days that he starts at catcher, and you're seeing that. It's almost like the closing catcher is Pedro Páez because Herrera just hasn't been able to throw out any base runners who try to steal. And we've seen some blocking issues from time to time as well with Herrera. So in close games late, the preference has been Páez for behind-the-plate purposes. And the thought process would be, go ahead and pinch run Ciani for Herrera because we're taking him out anyway. We're taking Herrera out and putting Páez behind the dish anyway. For the bottom of the eighth, I guess it would have been. And then for the bottom of the ninth, of course. And at that point, there may not be a bottom of the ninth. But if there is one, it's because the middle of the order got the job done in the top of the ninth and either tied or took the lead, which ended up happening. But it was 4, 5, and 6, Arenado, Goldschmidt, Burleson that did it, which meant Páez actually had an at-bat and an important one at that. And it ends up being the AB where he drives it to deep center field and gets the run home. Damn near had a 3-run homer. That would have been an unbelievable moment for Páez, but he still had the game-winning RBI nevertheless. And at that point, I said, you better get the Bluetooth speaker on in the Cardinal bullpen, get AC/DC pumping. And then shortly after that, they showed Ryan Helsley warming up in a hurry, because once that game turns on a dime, you're using your dude for that opportunity. And Ryan Helsley came in and slammed the door as he always does. 2 strikeouts, fly out to left to end it. And he ends up being the first MLB closer this season with 10 saves, double digits in the save department. Was the first to get there across baseball. He has been one of baseball's best relief pitchers, a 1.69 ERA. We didn't see his buddies today. Jojo Romero, Andrew Kittredge has been the 7-8-9 to go with Helsley in recent days that has been so darn effective. And I've seen it out there, people saying, what's the nickname? We got to come up with a nickname for these three guys. And I think I got one that I like. I'll see what you guys think of it. Again, they weren't utilized today as a group. But when they are, I think this is what we call them. I'm going with this as my answer. I'm calling them the triumvirate. The triumvirate. And if you have to Google that, in ancient Rome, a group of 3 men holding power, in particular, the unofficial coalition of Julius Caesar, Pompey, and Crassus in 60 BC. Who cares who they were? Evidently, there was a second triumvirate. But this is the third triumvirate, gosh darn it. Jojo Romero, Andrew Kittredge, Ryan Helsley. Because it does seem like when you see one, you tend to see the other two. That wasn't the case today, but it's happened enough times this year that I do think they need a nickname. I'm going with the triumvirate. You let me know whether that's something you like or whether you need to come up with a different one. You can come up with your own. I'm calling them that. I think it's cool. And then it can kind of go back to everybody was talking about the Roman Empire. How often do you think about the Roman Empire, gentlemen? Well, I don't really, other than as it relates to the triumvirate of the St. Louis Cardinals bullpen. So there you have that. The Cardinal offense is off the hook for their poor performance collectively in Game 1 because they got it done when it counted. They came around in the ninth inning, and it was just maybe one of those days. I don't like to do it often, and we've heard Cardinal managers for years have it as a saying in the back of their in their back pocket. Mike Schilt would say it. Matheny would say it. Ollie, I'm sure, has said it. You just got to tip your cap sometimes to the opposing starter when he's just that good. I don't like that. It feels like a cop-out, but today you can use it. You tip your cap to Jack Flaherty because he was inevitable. He was Thanos today, but you know what? If you watch those movies, Thanos didn't win. I'm just saying, spoiler alert, he didn't win. Jack Flaherty didn't win today. Didn't lose. Wasn't the loser in the game. Neither was Kyle Gibson. Neither of them were deserving of a fate like that. So it's fair that they didn't end up with one. But the Cardinals get the win. They stole game one, and it's a good thing they did because game two was not their night. It was not their moment in the sunshine. 11-6, the Tigers take game two. So we'll shift into more of the bad. We talked about the good. We got to get to the bad. The night game was a nightmare for the Cardinals. And it begins with Steven Matz just kind of getting hit around. He goes 3 1/3, 7 hits, 4 runs all earned, couple of walks, 1 strikeout, 1 home run allowed, and a 6.18 ERA now for the season, as Steven Matz was unable to get the Cardinals through 4 in this one. But then we hear after the game, perhaps, an explanation as to why Matz struggled. Now, you might say Matz struggled because he's been struggling and has not been performing for several of his recent outings. But there was apparently a reason that Ollie Marmol shared with the media in Detroit. We're going to play some of the audio here from Bally Sports Midwest and talk about what we think of it, what we think of this explanation. It came from Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol and courtesy of Bally Sports Midwest.
Didn't have enough to finish, guys. He's been working through low back all week, and you can just tell physically that he couldn't, like, finish. Velo was typically, we've seen 95, 96s. He was down 89, 92, some 93s, but it was just not enough. Yeah.
I feel like that was because of the back issue.
No doubt, yeah.
Was anything...
Worse as the game went on, but at the same time, continuing to push through it wasn't the answer. Mm-hmm. He didn't have enough to finish hitters. So at that point, we just went to our pen and tried to piece it together.
So it sounds like Ollie Marmol, and we'll play more of Marmol to give more context as to just when this back stuff came up for Steven Matz and when they knew about it. But it was clearly something that their hope was he'll be able to get the extra day because he didn't have to pitch Monday and figure out a way to pitch through it. But it sounds like in Ollie Marmol's response, he's watching in real time, knowing that the back was something that had bothered him earlier in the week. They make the decision he's going to start this game, despite having a little bit of a nagging back thing going on, that they believe he could pitch through, right? Like, clearly that was the decision and the thought process. I'll talk in a minute why I think that maybe was a questionable course of action, particularly when you consider the circumstances, but it was the choice. But Ollie Marmol sounding like, yeah, as I'm watching this game unfold, it was clear, and you heard Marmol say it a number of times there, that Matz just didn't have it. He didn't have enough to finish off hitters. So the longer you leave him out there, the more susceptible you are to this game really getting out of hand. That was the thought process there from Ollie Marmol. Let's hear more from the Cardinals manager here, courtesy of Bally Sports Midwest, on whether an injured list stint might be the next step for Steven Matz after Tuesday's outing.
Is that something that you might have to do, like an IL or something like that?
A little early for that. We're going to go ahead and let him come in tomorrow, see how he's feeling, get treatment, see the trainers, and then make a decision if we're wanting to try to work through it another outing or not. Yeah.
What were the checkpoints along the way between starts that he had to kind of hit, you know, physically to make the start?
Yeah, it was a matter of his pen feeling good and actually feeling like he can go. He says he can go, then you got to trust that he can go. But you can tell that physically it wasn't fully there today.
So that was the explanation from Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol. And you hear him say there, too early to say whether it's going to be an IL stint, but they're going to have him come in. They're going to see. Obviously, they get the off day on Thursday before coming back to St. Louis. So this isn't really something that has to be decided right this second, unless they decided they wanted to bring up an extra relief arm for the game on Wednesday morning. It's like a noon start, 12:30 start, something like that. So I don't know if they could even mobilize the arm in time. They probably could have because they've been done for a number of hours now if they were going to do that. But the idea being you could IL Mats, get an extra reliever, and then pick a new starter that can join the roster Friday, or even wait to have that starter join the roster until Mats's next turn, which I don't believe would be until Tuesday. So they could spend some time over the weekend having some extra relief bullets to use. It's like a bonus reliever because you would have only four starters on your roster, would be sort of the thought process there. And who the Cardinals would pick up, who they would bring up. Sam Roberta has been pitching really well in Memphis. I don't know when he last pitched. I know Klopfenstein, was on turn today and threw like five innings, gave up four runs. So my thought is this is interesting because they knew earlier in the week. I think Steven Matz said he kind of felt the back thing go on him maybe the day after his last start, a couple days after his last start when he was running, doing some conditioning. And you heard Ollie Marmol say, well, the checkpoint with the question by Derek Gould, the checkpoint was if he says he's healthy enough to go and if his bullpen looks good. I'm sure they had eyes on his midweek bullpen, and if that looked passable, then they would talk to the player and say, can you do it? And he said yes, clearly. The answer was no, clearly, in watching the performance, and it put the Cardinals in a serious bind, and it's a shame because it happened in a game where the offense was ready to go. Alec Burleson, three-run homer, turned this game around even after Steven Matz's troubled outing, had that 5-4 lead briefly, and we'll talk about Kyle Leahy. He was the 27th man, the extra guy that you get in the doubleheader, and the Cardinals decided to use him, which you basically are forced into doing when your starter only goes 3 1/3 during a doubleheader where you're playing 27 innings over the span of 24 hours. It's going to be about 3 p.m., give or take, local time here in St. Louis, when Wednesday's game wraps up, and they started at 2:40 local time on Tuesday with game one. So that's basically 24 hours. You're going to play 27 innings. So the reason that they had to have Matt start, right, is you can't do a bullpen game. But at the same time, it wasn't necessarily yesterday that this decision for him to go through was made, right? He would have pitched yesterday. If there wasn't a rain out. So it's not like the Cardinals found out last minute and couldn't mobilize another option quickly enough. And so they just said, let's go with Matz because he's the best we can do under the circumstances, just allowing him to try and pitch through it. No, I think the decision that he was going to pitch through it and that he was good enough to go had already been made, you know, previous to rolling out of bed on Tuesday and saying, here we go. The back thing was earlier in the week. So I don't think that argument necessarily holds up. You could say that the argument that Ollie made there is the one that can hold up, which is you have to trust your player. If he says he can go, then and it looks like he looks fine, there's nothing glaring that you notice as a coaching staff in his bullpen session, then the decision would be to have the guy start. But the reason it's risky to not be sure, which you can never be sure. A guy can think he's good to go. He can go out there in a game environment, and he's not. That's what happened today, clearly. And now we'll see whether the IL is something that they pursue. And if it is, it's not to say that, it's the Cardinals trumping up an injury that's not really there just to get him he's pitching badly, so you get him off the roster for a little while. A little phantom IL stint. I don't know, because I could see that side of it, but I could also see that the velo was down. Like, that's something measurable that you could see, and you could see it in his performance. So if you're knowing that there's a back thing, and then you're seeing 92, 89, 91 from Steven Matz on velocity, you're all Marmol, you go, yeah, something's not quite right. We're not going to try to allow him to pitch through the fourth inning. Under any other circumstance, you might have allowed him to do so, but you were trying to win the game. You were trying to keep it close, give your offense a chance to battle back. They go with Kyle Leahy. Cardinals get out of the fourth inning, still in the game. It's a little rough. You're down 4-0, but didn't give up any runs there in the fourth inning. And then you score 5 in the fifth, and it's a brand new ball game. So why Kyle Leahy again for the fifth inning? That was popular as a take and a question on Twitter. And I understand why, because Kyle Leahy, frankly, is not a big league caliber arm at this point. He's just not. He's got a 5.8 some odd ERA in AAA Memphis. We saw Kyle Leahy last year. He struggled. He struggled again today. Wasn't all his fault. We'll talk about why it really wasn't his fault when we get into the Brandon Crawford conversation. A couple of defensive plays that he just got screwed on, plain and simple. And then it wasn't Kyle Leahy who gave up the home run either. If you're saying, well, Kyle Leahy shouldn't have been tasked with that fifth inning, they should have gone Ryan Fernandez. I'll tell you this, Ryan Fernandez gave up a home run in this game. And so too did Giovanni Gallegos. And what you end up doing when you don't get that fifth inning out of Kyle Leahy, which obviously they didn't, and everything went off the rails, and they had to use other dudes just to get through the end of the game. But those were the guys that were going to pitch. Fernandez was going to pitch, and you were going to ask for more than 3 outs from him. Gallegos was going to pitch, and you were ideally going to ask for more than 3 outs from him. Unfortunately, he got 0. He walked 2, and he gave up 2 hits, and all 4 of them scored. 4 earned runs. Gave up a home run as well to Riley Green among those couple of hits and walks. So if you go with Leahy longer, the idea is you don't have to ask for as much of the rest of the guys. Now, Leahy's the one with the least pedigree and the least amount of probably faith in him, because you haven't seen him, and when you did see him last year, it wasn't good. So the idea that, okay, now you're back in this game and you've taken a lead, why Leahy for the fifth at that point? I think it was Leahy's fifth before they scored the runs, and the argument would have been maybe it shouldn't have been after. And I can see the argument, Cardinals fans, I can. And if all he had it to do over again, knowing they lost the game, he might take that time machine and say, oh, screw it, let's see it this way. But you may lose by a similar margin. You may not, but you may. The reality is maybe that fifth inning goes differently. Maybe Fernandez with a clean slate doesn't come in and give up a home run. Maybe he's able to control things better if he had his own inning. And let's say it's scoreless. But later in the game, you know who was still going to have to pitch? Gallegos. He just was. He was going to have to pitch. And he was going to have to pitch even earlier and potentially stick with him longer than just 4 batters, even if he's not getting anybody out, because it would have been a little bit earlier in the timeline of the game, at least in theory. They were trying to ride Leahy through that fifth inning so that they could then set up, okay, inning for Fernandez, he gets the sixth, maybe the seventh, Gallegos eighth, figure it out if there is a ninth. You could go, I mean, at that point, if you're still leading, JoJo and Kittredge would have been options. But they just felt like they needed to get a little bit more, because here's the other thing, Cardinals fans, tomorrow's game hasn't happened yet. They haven't played Wednesday. Remember the last series, something similar played out when you saw JoJo, Kittredge, and Helsley throw Friday and Saturday and get those wins for the Cardinals in New York. But then what happened Sunday, you knew you were going to have to rely on somebody from that B tier, from that second group of relievers. And we saw things that we liked. Fernandez and Libertor ended up doing a really nice job. Gallegos came in. He was part of that B tier on Sunday in New York. And I think he walked a couple guys and got a couple outs, but they had to rescue him. So continually having to rescue Gio is really what it's more about, I think, than Ollie Marmol bad manager because he went Kyle Leahy. Like, before the Geo thing happened, this game was still closely contested. It was 7-6 at that point, right? Gallegos gave up 4 runs, and it's 11-6. All his runs end up coming around to score. I think Nick Robertson might have been in the game, inherited runners, but they ended up scoring, and they're charged to Geo. So that was probably happening regardless. Maybe not. Maybe in his infinite wisdom, Ollie Marmol can schedule that bullpen thing a little differently. He doesn't go with Leahy, and Gallegos faces different hitters than he would have, and he wouldn't walk the world and give up base hits and home runs to the rest of the world. But realistically, I think we've all seen Gio struggle. He's got a 9 ERA now for the season. We've seen it look bad for Gallegos this year. It might have just been the case that whenever he came in, it was going to look rough. And as Ollie Marmol, you know how it's looked for Gio, and you also know that the way this sets up is you're going to have to probably use him for an inning to bridge you to JoJo and Kittredge to finish this game off. And knowing that if you burn JoJo and Kittredge, you will have thrown all three of the triumvirate today. Who the hell is going to pitch on Sunday in relief of Michaelis? Is he just going 8? I said Sunday, I meant Wednesday. Who's going to pitch Wednesday in relief of Michaelis? He might just have to pitch the whole game at that point. And I'm sure guys would show up to the ballpark on Wednesday and, all right, you get the off day Thursday, so this guy's available, that guy, okay, I feel good, I can pitch an inning, I can give you an inning, I can give you two, whatever the case would be. They'd figure it out. Liberatore only threw 12 pitches or whatever in game one, but all those guys would have thrown, and then perhaps you're in a bigger bind on Wednesday, which the Cardinals would do. They've done it before, and I think they would do it again. If they had that 5-4 lead going into the seventh, yeah, you would have probably seen JoJo and Kittredge both, and maybe they just, between the two of them, finish the game and throw a little extra, which means that they're going to get the consecutive days off. They're going to get off Wednesday, off Thursday, and maybe they're ready to go come Friday. But the reason that we're talking so much about bullpen stuff and talking around these issues, people say, oh, Brendan doesn't want to criticize Ollie Marmol. It was obviously the wrong decision to keep Leahy in there. Firstly, man, I think it is something to be said that Leahy being the option for a 27th man is a little bit of an indictment because his ERA in Memphis is almost 6. He's not performing in the minors, and I don't know who the option would have been. Everybody in Memphis had the off day on Monday, because they don't, minor leagues doesn't play on Monday. So they would have played no game prior to being used or needed on Tuesday for this doubleheader. So the 27th man conceivably could have been anybody on the 40-man roster. And of course, you're always going to have it be a pitcher so that you're best positioned to be able to cover innings. And I'm scrolling through here. The Cardinals just don't have a lot of quality relievers to bring up in that situation. They're either kind of here or they're hurt, which is why Kyle Leahy was the option. You could have brought up a starter, I guess, but then you're throwing some other stuff off. Might have been a nice thought to bring a starter up, though, if you're thinking you're not entirely sure what's going on with Steven Matz and his back, which they would have known by that point. But I think Palante, Robertson, Thompson, Klopfenstein, they're all in the rotation for Memphis. And I'm looking up and down the 40 man, and I just, unless I'm missing somebody, there's not another reliever that was really an option. But I think it might be kind of incumbent on the Cardinals to have somebody different on the 40 man than Kyle Leahy, potentially, if that's your concern. If you can't trust Kyle Leahy to come up and be the 27th man and actually pitch more than just 2 outs of rescue when your starter goes 10 outs, then that's an organizational thing. That's a John Mozeliak question, not an Ollie Marmol question. That's the 27th man that he was provided, and his starter got 10 outs. I'm not going to throw Ollie Marmol under the bus when Steven Matz gets 10 outs, and he says, hey, can this guy get more than 2? Because we're going to be boned on the back end of this thing if we don't find a way to get some length from somebody here. And then I get it. You get the off day Thursday. That's going to help. But you play again in, 12 hours, whatever it is. 12 hours from me recording this because it's like midnight now. So that's kind of where my thought is on the Kyle Leahy thing. Here's the other side of it. I was kind of mean to Kyle Leahy because I said, look, he's not been good, and I don't think he's a big league caliber arm at this point in his career, and the numbers have backed that up. So I think that's fair. But also, he didn't really pitch that bad today. Gallegos served up a bomb. Ryan Fernandez served up a bomb. Those are mistakes. But Leahy didn't do that. He started off that fifth inning with a ground ball to the shortstop. And if you look in the StatCast or the MLB.com game day, whatever you watch, the little description in the box score says, single to the shortstop. It's a ground ball to short. And Brandon Crawford doesn't make the play. Yes, it was hit softly. I had people on Twitter asking, "Do you think Mason Wynn would have made that play?" 100 times out of 100, I believe that Mason Wynn would have made that play. Well, maybe not. Errors happen. Even Arenado makes errors. My point is, I don't worry about Mason Wynn having the arm strength to throw out a guy at first base on a softly hit grounder. Crawford, though, man, it sometimes looks like he's moving in slow motion, like he's in quicksand. It was not a play that, watching it, I thought, and maybe I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and you can tell me in the comments I'm being too harsh on Crawford for this particular defensive play. But it just looked like one of those where I'm thinking, how did this develop that way, that it wasn't just a routine 6-3? Yeah, a little softly hit. You charge it hard, and you make a throw. It's not that he didn't get to the ball. It's not that he didn't get a throw off. It just happens a little bit slower than it needed to make the play. Single to the shortstop. I get it. It was only 68 miles per hour exit velocity off the bat. It's just a play that has to be made, in my opinion. It has an 070 expected batting average. I don't know if Crawford was playing deeper or what it was. You just make that play. I don't feel too badly about just calling a spade in this case. That's a play that's got to be made, especially when you've got your dang 27th man on the mound. You're in the middle of a stretch of having to cover 27 innings in 24 hours. And you've got your 27th man out there looking to try and get you an extra inning because your starter only went 3. He got 10 outs for you. That's just a play that's got to be made, man. He produced the grounder. Despite the 5.8 ERA that Kyle Leahy has in Memphis, he got that grounder. The veteran who was supposed to stabilize the backup shortstop role couldn't turn it into an out. That's really what I saw in that play. And I get that it's only one play, but it's also kind of not, because we've sort of had this conversation a few times about Brandon Crawford. And not to mention, Crawford came up twice in the at-bats that he had to begin the game. His first two ABs had two runners on base, one in scoring position both times, 2 strikeouts. So stranded 4, made that defensive. It's not even a blunder. It's just like he didn't make the play. And you're the shortstop. You've got to be one of the best fielders on the team, the best defensive assets on the field. And Brandon Crawford, I just don't think is that at this stage in his career. And I understand where the Cardinals, people are like, oh, DFA Crawford. Okay, let's talk about this. No, seriously. Some people would say, you got to have Mason Wynn in there. If you're going to have, I went back and forth with somebody on Twitter. If Mason Wynn's going to come in for Brandon Crawford after the fifth inning anyway, why is he not starting the game? All right. I want to say this part really clearly, and I'm not in Detroit to be covering this series to know, to have asked the question. And even if you asked a question this bluntly, Ollie Marmol might not, he might have to be a little tactful in the way he answers it. Might not give you a full answer, but Ollie Marmol didn't want Mason Wynn to play tonight. He didn't want him to have to go into this game. He went in by what you can only describe as necessity because of Brandon Crawford's play. That's what I saw. And if there was an injury or if there was another explanation, then I'll eat that crow if I find out differently. But the way it looked to me today is Brandon Crawford went 0-for-2 with 2 Ks when this Cardinal offense needed to try to get back into the game after Steven Matz kind of flubbed 4 runs in 3 innings. And ultimately, they do climb back into it thanks to home runs by Brendan Donovan and Alec Burleson. But Crawford had 2 opportunities to make something happen, didn't, and then cost the team a run defensively, arguably 2, because that should have been the first out in the inning. We can talk about Burleson's play in left field. It's another example of a guy just kind of moving slow, He was playing pretty deep in left, but he came up short on the ball hit by Torkelson, I believe it was. Ended up resulting in a double later that inning. And it went from there, I think, a ground out, scored a run. And then that's when you see the pitching change and the home run given up to Perez by Ryan Fernandez. So, to me, those runs score because of the Brandon Crawford error. Because after that, it was ground out, the double by Torkelson, ground out. Certainly the second run, but even the first one, because if Torkelson doubles, he's standing on second base. There's no Mark Canha's not on third, which he was held up on that double because he didn't read it very well. I think he actually held up at third on a double when he started the play at second, I think is what happened. I'm not going to go back and look. We're almost an hour into this thing already, but I think that's what it was. Those runs really score because Brandon Crawford doesn't make that play. Canha, if he grounds out, that's one. Riley Green, ground out, two. Torkelson has the weird double that Burleson just couldn't quite get to, which is not like a... Just the same way this is not a misplay by Crawford, his skill level is not such that he was able to make the play. That is the way that I look at it on the Crawford play. And I think that's the same to be said for Burleson, but I'm not going to rip him because he has put in a lot of work to be better out there. And I also just think he started so deep. Now, maybe he didn't need to be playing that deep, but they're also trying to maybe be no doubles defense. Don't let anything behind you to allow this game to spiral on you. Even if you end up giving up the lead, don't let it be more than that. Okay, maybe that's the thought process. I just thought he was pretty darn deep, and he's not a guy super fleet of foot, and it ends up dropping in front of him. Whatever. Ground out, Jake Rogers, that scores the run. Canha gets in from third, and then the homer happens. But that's with a new pitcher. I don't think anybody scores if that Crawford play is made. And Kyle Leahy gets his job done in the fifth inning. Ollie Marmol can rest a little easier because he didn't have to get more from his bullpen that, like, just getting through the starter innings. I can use the 27th man to do that, and then I can use the guys that I actually trust in the leverage spots to bring this thing home 6, 7, 8, 9. Figure out a way to do it with the guys you have at your disposal. Gio was going to have to be one of them, so you maybe don't win the game anyway, because remember, it was 7-6 when Gio came in, and then suddenly it was 11-6, and is very, very different. So the Gallegos conversation is one that has to be had, but I think we just saw the option for the 40-man, or I should say the option from the 40-man reliever to take Gio's spot. Like, let's say Gio is dealing with something physical, which Ollie Marmol interestingly said, nope, he's fine. Physically, he's okay, which is not great news because his numbers aren't fine. His ERA is not fine. So that's something you got to think about. But the option would be the only guy on the roster is Kyle Leahy. And so you'd have to think, okay, who's going to be the reliever that comes up and takes that spot of Gio, even if you did. Let's say you did want a DFA or whatever it is that you might consider doing. They just don't really have the guys in the minors, at least on the 40-man roster, to bring up. So if you want to make a move with somebody else, and I don't even know who that would be. I'm trying right now to find out, but I got to complain about this publicly. It's so bad that the Memphis Redbirds website doesn't have stats on it. You couldn't possibly... Where are these damn stats? All right, it's under team. All right, maybe not so bad. I had half a window open so I can see my audio recording. And once I made it full screen, I'm just going to leave this in because it's funny. I'm sorry, Memphis Redbirds. I was wrong. But seriously, it seems like a lot of times I look for these and you can't find them anywhere. And the reason for it is, I guess it's physically not there unless I make it full screen. Because the team tab, no, seriously, it's not. I reinstitute my complaint because there's a team tab and then you go to individual stats. But if you're only open, the window isn't full screen. If you click team tab, it pulls up the roster. And so you actually physically cannot get there unless you make your computer window full screen to get to it. All right, nobody cares about this, but I needed to see that process through. That was a roller coaster. Anyway, my point is checking out the Memphis roster to see who they could even call up if they wanted to. The answer might be Connor Thomas. He's pitched well. 2.25 ERA. Now, he is a left-hander, though. Remember, he was in the fall league a couple of years ago, and we thought last year maybe he would make an impression, and he didn't. But he's looked pretty good and has been a multi-inning type of relief pitcher, because in Memphis, it doesn't seem like they have guys going incredibly deep, so I think you need guys like that. He's got a 2.25 ERA in 12 games, 20 innings pitched, 21 strikeouts. Good for Connor Thomas, man. Maybe that is the answer, but then you start to talk about, well, more than half your bullpen soon is going to be lefties. But Kyle Leahy, 5.84 ERA in Memphis, you know, 14 strikeouts in 12 innings. That's nice. But Ryan Lutis, maybe that's the answer. He's got a 1.04 ERA. I don't think that's crazy at all. I don't believe he was on the 40-man at any point, but maybe he should be. Like, it is going to get to the point where the Cardinals just have to start throwing some options at this thing. It's not going to be Josh James, ERA 17 with Memphis. Not going to be Wilking Rodriguez, 18. And those guys have hardly pitched, so I don't know if they're still healthy or not. I'm not up to date on all of that stuff. I'm just literally scouring the Memphis roster right now. Chris Roycroft, 26-year-old, has got a 0.82 ERA. Not a big strikeout total. I want to see big, lofty strikeout totals before I can expect a guy to be able to translate from Memphis to St. Louis. Got to find something in there. He's got 9 Ks in 11 innings. He's 6'8", 26-year-old. So, you know, maybe they do maybe have some options. I think right now Ryan Lutis would be my option. If you're thinking about, and look, let's be honest, even at this point, if you're not ready to DFA Giovanni Gallegos and you don't think anything physical is there, I'm not saying the Cardinals could announce that they're doing this, but you can say, oh, he's dealing with a whatever. Just, you know, pull out an old copy of that game operation and just look at the different bones and stuff on there and pick something. Teams have done it. They get in trouble for doing it sometimes. I think the Dodgers have definitely done the old Phantom IL thing before. So it might be time to figure something out, whatever it's going to be. Look, Gallegos has been really good for the Cardinals over his Cardinal career, but if you look at the last couple of years, numbers were rough last year. Home runs got him. Numbers are rough this year. Walks and home runs are getting him. So if it's not physical, how long do you let it play out before you just make a different decision? And look, if there's anything physical, you can buy him some time to figure it out by leaning into that physical thing. It's not that you're making something up. I know I said that, but guys are going through stuff all the time. If there's a physical element to this at all, now might be the time to discover that. And then you got to figure out the 40 man, but maybe they figure it out and Ryan Lutis is the answer with a 1 ERA in Memphis. I'm not saying he's going to come up and be great, but I think you got to try to start doing some things, because you're getting back into that tier that we've talked about where we've seen it with, I remember it with Mike Schilt. He said, look, I can't keep throwing the same three relievers. And then there was some philosophical differences where maybe those were the differences, right? I tease. I think it was much more than that. But there is that narrative that Cardinals fans have that he questioned the front office and maybe asked for some more players or whatever the case. Those kind of little public comments that would be made during the season of, I can't keep throwing the same two or three guys, that means we got to have better bullpen depth that we can rely upon. And Ollie Marmol has echoed that at times too. Anybody who's in that manager chair knows, look, you've got to have a deep bullpen to be able to weather these storms, because stuff happens. Stuff happens throughout a season. You have a rainout and suddenly you're playing 27 innings in 24 and a half hours. And you got to figure out your pitching for that. And that's just the way it goes sometimes. But let me know, Cardinals fans, what you think about all this. What do you think of the Matt situation? Are they going to IL him? Is it because of an injury or ineffectiveness? Whatever the case, just get him to a spot where he can't hurt you for right now until they figure out what's going on with him. That's certainly on the table, it seems. They'll see how the back feels for him coming in on Wednesday, but it sounds like certainly a possibility that the Cardinals could be, as my microphone falls down, that the Cardinals could be dipping into Memphis or whatever the case is going to be to find a starter. We know Zach Thompson has had some familiarity pitching in that role already. but is Sam Robertson performed well enough that they might consider him? And he is on the 40-man roster. So would that be a move that the Cardinals might want to make? You know, how much of a sample size do you need before it sort of feels like you're rushing a guy like Sam Robertson, who's only 22, I believe. He's still pretty young. So do you rush him into that situation because of his performance and the need at the big league level to find something? Or do you go with more of a tried and true? It wouldn't shock me for the Cardinals to bring up Pallante. Like, that would be and it may not be time for him yet, but they wouldn't matter. There would be no day minimum that he would have to stay in the minors if it was due to an injury, and you could take your pick, Gallegos or Mats, which, again, I don't think it's the case for Gallegos. All he said, he was given the chance to say, yeah, he's dealing with X, Y, or Z post-game, and he said, no, actually, almost in a tone of voice that was like, if you can possibly believe it, there's not anything physically going on. He says he feels great, which, like I said, is maybe almost discouraging, because you go, if you had something, it might explain what's going on here. But he, according to Marmol, said he doesn't. So what do the Cardinals want to do with the bullpen situation? Nick Robertson, by the way, did end up throwing two scoreless innings. So maybe he's a guy that they can start to lean on a little bit more. I know that Fernandez gave up the home run tonight, but I think he's still been a very pleasant surprise for this bullpen. But Gallegos right now really seems to be a question mark, and I'm just not sure how often they're really keen on using John King in these situations. We just haven't seen him really exposed to many of these opportunities either. And especially if you get into a leverage spot, they're looking to avoid it. So does that have to mean a bullpen shakeup that involves Memphis at some point in time? And then the Cardinals obviously are going to have to figure out, well, what does that look like from a 40-man roster perspective? They did put Drew Rahm on the 60-day injured list to make room for Leahy. And I think I need to correct myself. And the comments are probably already going to do this, but I'll at least be able to say, hey, go to the 50, what is it? Go to the, man, we're over an hour. Go to the hour and 1 minute mark where I corrected myself. Leahy was not on the 40-man. I don't know how he ended up being the choice when everybody was healthy and available. Sorry, guys. It's sleep deprived, and I should have been more on top of that. They could have added somebody else to the 40-man. Here's how it happened that it's Leahy. It's a one-day thing, and he's going to be DFA'd at the earliest convenience of whenever they need the spot. So that's your answer. Leahy gets DFA'd. Nobody claims him, and he's back to Memphis in 3 days, and nothing really changes for him. But you're not pushing anybody else through. Like, if Lutis is pitching well in AAA, you're not bringing him onto the 40-man for a day and then going, well, when we need a spot, kick him back off. Because they, at that point, if he's somebody that's a higher performer in the minors, maybe another team would be interested if they had to pass him through waivers. So if I talked a bunch of moronic stuff earlier about Leahy being on the 40-man, that's not applicable. This stuff is what I just said. I might even put a note in the description apologizing for that, but I just can't possibly go back and find where I said all that and delete it. So it is what it is. If you stayed till the end, you got a treat of me correcting myself on some stuff. But that just further exemplifies why they should be able to do something with Gallegos. Again, it's hard because he has been such a prominent guy for the team for many years at this point, but it's also hard to watch him pitch right now. So you have to pull that string at some point. And when is the point? I feel like you could make the case that over the past 5 to 8 years, whatever it's been, where the Cardinals have had a little bit of a downturn, a decline, a hallmark of what this team has done is they wait a little bit too long to make the hard business decision. It's never one that comes a little early where you go, wow, I can't believe they cut him or they IL'd the guy. You know, that came out of nowhere that they made that. You know, nobody would be surprised right now if you did either thing with Gio. It's a hard thing, and I'm not advocating DFA. I'm personally advocating it's an IL stint, and I don't care what it's for. You let him decide. What do you want your injury to be? Again, that's not legal. I get it. I'm just having some fun. But really, that's what you do. You figure out what's the ailment what's ailing you. You know, go on the IL with high ERA, whatever you call it. Go on the IL with whip. Yeah, I've got some whiplash. My whip is way too freaking high. Whatever it is. Because I think he has meant enough to this team that you give him, that's almost a courtesy, right? Where you're like, we're gonna let you kind of have this, and then you go to Memphis when you're ready to rehab from your injury, and then you figure it out from there. That would be my. But again, if you're the Cardinals and Gio's like, I'm healthy. I understand that you can't just do that. As much as it is fun to, you know, make jokes, you can't necessarily just do that. If the player's like, no, I'm good. Get me back out there. It's like, okay, all right. What do we do here? But I would say the 40 man is not actually a problem because Leahy is on it after Drew Rahm was 60 day IL'd. And by the way, how great would it be to have Keenan Middleton or Riley O'Brien or both of them back? I'm assuming Friday we might get a better update when the Cardinals are home. John Mozeliak typically does a media sesh on the first day of a homestand. So maybe there will be up-to-date info from the Pobo on those two. But they could really use Keenan Middleton. There's no doubt about that. But let me know what you think, Cardinals fans. We talked a lot about the pitching. Kyle Gibson, good stuff. What do you think about this Brandon Crawford stuff too, though? Like, it's getting to the point I wanted to talk a little bit more than I did about it, I guess. But the conversation of why, and I may have teased it earlier and not gotten to it, but the conversation of why Crawford over Wynn, I think I did talk about, which is they didn't want Wynn to have to play both games of a doubleheader in three games, 27 innings in 24 hours. They didn't want that. Ollie Marmol didn't want that. He brought in Mason Wynn in the middle of the game because Crawford's performance dictated it. He performed poorly, and Ollie was probably, I mean, I would have been kind of, it struck me like he's just fed up. Like, all right, I can't do this anymore. Wynn's coming in. We're going to try to win this game. It was not really a consideration to do that, I don't feel like, in the previous starts that Crawford has had. Maybe late innings he would take an AB or something, but this was the fifth inning that they made the switch after. He had gone 0-for-2 with two strikeouts, four stranded on base, and the play defensively that he didn't make. To me, that's significant. It sort of signals from Ollie Marmol that, hey, I'm not really, like, this isn't working. So I'm not arguing against the Crawford role being revisited. I think it's been revisited, at least by Marmol. How does the front office, though, see it? It just turned May a half an hour ago as I record this, so it's early. But I'm pointing out that Ollie Marmol doesn't have the authority to cut Brandon Crawford, but he could decide to start using Jose Fermin in that role instead. And that would be such a blatant message that it would have to be. That's the thing, is fans don't maybe always recognize the interpersonal part of this. But if Fermin is drawing starts at shortstop over Crawford and Crawford's just never playing, like Brandon Crawford's whole thing was to play again because his kids wanted him to, and they're old enough to appreciate, and they wanted him to do it. I don't think Brandon Crawford wants to just sit on the bench and not play all year. I think he would like to get into some games. I don't know what the situation is, and I don't know what it's going to be, but Ollie Marmol, he had the authority to pull him out of the game after five innings because it just wasn't working. He just wasn't playing well, and we've seen it. I know the Cardinals wanted to kind of let it play out because he didn't have a spring training, and he'll get his legs under him and all that, but he, to this point, has not gotten his legs under him, just speaking objectively about what I'm seeing. So I just think it's notable that he didn't want Wynn playing. I understand people would say, well, why not Fermin starting over Crawford? That's a fair argument to make, that the manager could have made that decision. To say that Wynn should have just started all three games in this 24-hour stretch, I don't think is realistic for a guy just coming off of a back injury. Same way that you wonder, should a starter pitch coming off of a back injury when you need innings and length from that guy? You got to be extra sure that he's going to be ready. Like, those are mild criticisms that I'm happy to levy. But when it comes to the Crawford thing, like, yes, Fermin is on the roster. Him being here is more, though, about Jordan Walker not being here. And Jordan Walker is who was down when Fermin came up. And they need to get Walker the playing time and the swing fix and all of that in Memphis. Fermin is rewarded with, you know, big league service time and money and opportunity even though he's really not playing, he'd rather be here than there, I'm sure, at this point in his career. But you can make the case that, is he a great shortstop? Maybe not defensively, but Brandon Crawford isn't either. But the role is, the title of the role is, well, Brandon Crawford's the backup veteran shortstop. So, of course, you know, he's the guy to get that opportunity when Wynn's going to sit during a doubleheader. I don't know, though. I think Jose Fermin could do what Brandon Crawford is doing. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Because what he's doing is not really much to speak of at this point. And I know that it looks good on paper to have the veteran shortstop out there, but it's just on paper. If it doesn't help you in a game, then is it really valuable? And that's kind of where I think, look, people were saying it at the time. I remember being in Jupiter when they signed him and talked to him, and remember seeing the press conference on the patio. It wasn't really a press conference. It was just him chance to talk with the media for the first time. And he said, yeah, my kids want me to play. And, you know, I kind of would have rather been in Arizona, but the Cardinals are the team I was willing to come to Florida for. And yeah, I don't really know when I'm going to play. I'll play any position they want me to. I'll do some utility work. Mo said, no, that won't be necessary. Like, okay. I don't know. It's just, you know, didn't have a real spring training, and Cardinals committed a couple million to him because they thought it would be valuable to do so. Again, the whole thing was getting Edmund to have free runway to be the outfielder that they wanted him to be. We still haven't seen Tommy Edman, so it hasn't really played out that way either. I just don't know. The Cardinals aren't the sunk cost kind of organization. They kind of let something play out, and they give every last opportunity when they spend a couple million bucks on something to try and get some value out of that thing. That's where they're at right now with Brandon Crawford. I don't know if the front office is looking at this situation. Cardinals fans have been looking at it a certain way for a month now. I don't know if the front office is, but I tell you what, today Ollie Marmol clearly was, because of the move that he made. Took him out of the game after five. Just was not, it's an untenable situation is what it struck me as today, but it's only May 1st. So I don't know if this is something where the Cardinals are going to kind of stick to the company line of, well, he's a veteran. He just needs some time to kind of get his legs under him. It's been a month. I don't really know what their plan's going to be, but I know the way it's looking right now. And like I said, you could say what you want about Fermin's defense. I just don't really know. I don't really know. You hear it in my voice. I'm seeing the same thing you guys are seeing on this one. So I'll be curious to see whether the Cardinals, how they view it, because they clearly valued the Crawford addition enough to do it. But was that just an example of that market really began to move and they were a little panicked about Mason Wynn's back injury that was already going on, by the way? Like, the timeline matches up. It does. And a little worried about what happens if he's out with no Edman. That's what it was to me. They had to have coverage. They could spin it any way they wanted to. And I think the Edman thing is real. They wanted Edman to just have to, you know, be able to be an outfielder. But also, if Mason Wynn's back turns the wrong way, they had to have somebody that could kind of do it in the early months. Seems like Mason Wynn's back is coming around, though. I mean, if they were willing to put him in today for that second game, I think that he's getting to a point where they can hack it. And I also think they should, again, you can't do this. It's kind of weird, because the way to see if the roster could get by without Brandon Crawford, if they could get along without him, would be to put Brendan Donovan at shortstop for a day and look at it and see. But if you do that, it's very, very obvious what's happening, and so you can't do that, right? It's just, you kind of lose Brandon Crawford at that point. Like, well, what am I doing here if you got this Fermin guy, he's playing a shortstop one day, and then Donovan. Like, they can't really do the tryouts on the fly, but honestly, it might be just the way to do it at some point. I don't know how long you wait. It's only been a month, so maybe you wait longer. But let me know, Cardinals fans. It's been rough for Brandon Crawford, and I think today it was an example of one of the reasons they lost the game. Although, when Gallegos is charged with four runs and doesn't record an out, you probably weren't going to win anyway. But that's going to do it for this edition of the show. I basically made this one as long as a live stream, but in fairness, I had to talk about two games. So, appreciate you guys for listening, as always. Make sure I'm going to keep plugging it. If you want to listen ad-free on Spotify, you can. DM me on Twitter if you want that link, but it's in the description to all the videos. $5 a month, Spotify. You can go ad-free if you subscribe over there. I will still be doing a YouTube membership, so stay tuned for that. I just haven't had time to set it up yet, but that is going to do it. I promise the show is ending now. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Be Shafe Daily. Peace.